Back in July of 1999, we had a crisis here in Berkeley because the local Pacifica network station, KPFA, suddenly locked out volunteers and fired some longtime volunteers and created a real crisis. And this led to huge demonstrations and people camping out in front of the station. And a group of us here in Berkeley, who were part of the Free Radio Berkeley Collective, we decided it was time to do something.
Les Radke, Coalition for a Democratic Pacifica.
Because it was off the air, because all the politics were off the air, Stephen Dunifer and the Coalition for a Democratic Pacifica decided to broadcast all the rallies, but not only broadcast the rallies using micropower radio, but a friend of mine has a server in his room, and that server was right across from KPFA. So not only did we broadcast in the Berkeley area, but we also were able to put it on the internet. So now that it was on the internet, it meant not only could we broadcast from there, have it go on the internet, but we also figured out a way to take it from the internet and put it onto micropower radio stations. And that led to the idea that we can actually have a string of stations, which in turn becomes a network for, say, the Bay Area, by simply taking this portable micropower radio, taking it to the rallies, broadcasting it, putting it on the internet, and then at the other end of the internet, anybody who has a server can take it off and rebroadcast it on micropower radio. And we're still in the process of setting these stations up, because one never knows what will happen with KPFA. They can shut the signal down anytime they want, because they have an ISDN line up at the transmitter, and that allows them to close down the station and rebroadcast from anywhere. If they do that, because we're setting up this string of micropower stations that's connected through the internet, we're able to have our own network to get the information out to folks.
I talked to Peter for 2 weeks, and we haven't budged. We didn't enter all these committees and stuff. We all told them we first came, we got the door, and we're not going to leave until we are able to walk through that door, and it's our station with no compromise. That's what we tell them, no compromise. What committee they belong to, who's selling what to where, we don't know. Because a lot of stuff being behind doors. They don't even tell us, and we hear every day. But I tell you this, we're not compromising. We're going right through this door, and we're not giving up until we go through this door. We've been here for 2 straight weeks, day and night.
So we found this location here in the west end of Berkeley. The landlord helped us out, agreeing to let us put our beautiful antenna up on the roof and run wiring to it. And Berkeley Liberation Radio was born. Right now we have about 40 to 50 volunteers. We're a dues-paying organization. Everybody chips in $10 a month to help pay for our rent and telephone and other meager expenses. And we broadcast 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have pre-recorded programming during the late night hours. And then during daytime hours, there's usually somebody in the studio.
Showing their true colors, Pacifica had Nicole Swire fired. Ben Bansky and Robbie Osmond, now Dennis Bernstein's been unhired. So we're taking a stand as we march and chant, please listen to what we say.
What kind of stuff do you have on your show usually?
I don't know. Next week, like, I'm going to have the city councilman, Chris Worthington, and I've had the mayor on my show. Some local stuff, you know, what's going on in the neighborhood, trying to keep our neighborhood at least somewhat sane. I deal Tarot on Telegraph Avenue and Telegraph and Channing, man, and I'm going to tell you something, you know, that's a strange place to be doing that.
We have a show totally dedicated to talking about the trade embargo with Cuba and why it should be lifted. We have a senior statesman by the name of Bill Mandel, who comes in every week and reads from his autobiography, which is quite an interesting story.
What kind of stuff does he talk about?
Being in the Soviet Union back in the early days of the revolution, and growing up on the streets of New York and being part of the free speech movement here in the 60s in Berkeley. All sorts of interesting non-mainstream music. We have folks who come in and do shows with just drum and bass music. Or folks who come in and do like bluegrass and folk music. We have a DJ who was one of the great London Sound System reggae DJs by the name of Ibby Judah. And he comes in and does radio on Saturday and Sunday. All sorts of music, political issues of all kinds can be heard. A good example is Bicycle Liberation Radio. They've been with us since we turned it on back in 1995. They're on every Friday night, and their goal is the elimination of all automobiles and to replace them with a bicycle-friendly society.
Today there is a KPFA rally over in Oakland at Mosswood Park starting, about 10 minutes ago. And it's going to be an all-day thing, so if you didn't get there yet, you can go on down. There's music, food, and refreshments. And the purpose is that it's a First Amendment rights rally. So as you know, that's what we're here for, too, First Amendment rights.
Elvis, you who are the trickster, the horned one, and our own son, King, be with me. You who are the essence of cool and the essence of tacky, teach me the power of paradox. Elvis, you who embody mirth and reverence, help me to learn to laugh at myself.
Yeah, 104.1.
104.1 back again.
Tune it in. Listen.
Good, man, that's good.
We got some reggae guys on the air right now. They're smoking.
That's good, man.
My fellow Americans.
Microkind Radio, San Marcos, Texas.
It is my patriotic duty to deliver the most important poem of the decade. Ode to the noble hemp plant.
Came on, I think it was March 26, 1997.
Zeal Stefanoff, co-founder Kind Radio.
And 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There was a two-month period after about 5 months in the air that we thought, oh, we'll go off from two until six. And we heard so much protest over that that we said, forget it, we're going to come back on the air. And we've been over 2 years now, 24/7.
What are some of the things on a daily basis or weekly basis that's on this station that you probably wouldn't hear on mainstream radio?
Joe Patak, co-founder, Kind Radio.
Well, one of the things that we offer probably that makes us most unique is the opportunity for anybody at any time to come into our station and talk about whatever is of concern to them at that day. And that includes politicians, that includes people who live in neighborhoods who are being threatened by development, or people who are concerned about environmental issues. It's an immediate and intimate format of communication to talk to your neighbors.
Microkind Radio is an excellent radio station in San Marcos, Texas. They are on the World Wide Web. They have a real audio feed. I enjoy listening to them in Berkeley. They come in fine over my computer speaker.
Actually, what happened is they brought Dunifer down here to South by Southwest, and him and an Austin engineer came down here and set the fancy engineering stuff up that has to be set up. It's not that fancy, but. And then Dunifer turned on the station. This was like in mid-March. At that time, then, we published a schedule of time slots. We started our week on Tuesday in San Marcos, because nobody really gets anything done here on Monday, and so we just blow that off. We start our mornings when the sun comes up, so our calendar starts at 6 a.m., goes from Tuesday until Monday. Austin's doing their schedules that way, too. It's much more, it's less Christian.
From midnight to 6 a.m., it's pretty much anything goes. We allow full creative bounty, and except for the pornography. The basic undermining question that we look at to a programmer, if they're going to be pushing the rules, is what will your answer be to the federal prosecutor who asks you, what is the source material of these sounds? And if you have to say it's an X-rated movie, well, that's pornography. If you say, well, that's me and my girlfriend working together to express our human desire of to overcome the sadness and poverty in the world. Sounds good to me, yeah.
You mentioned that Dunifer and those guys hadn't applied for a license first. Do you think that's what a lot of stations need to do to avoid getting shut down?
Well, that's what the Wilkins ruling was that if they, since they hadn't applied for a license, they didn't have any standing in federal court. Now, although our suit's with Canyon Radio, Canyon Lake Radio, we did apply. We even asked them for a waiver. I was in the military and government long enough, I knew that there's a waiver for everything. If you want to get a blowjob while you're president, there's a waiver for it, right? You got to go to Congress. And so we'd asked them for a legitimate waiver. I mean, there was no reason they should deny us that. Our stations had all been stolen from this town. We had no access to the community, and FCC was in violation of their own policies. So why not? But it'll be interesting to see what happens at this point.
Have they contacted you recently, the FCC?
Yes, the FCC recently finally issued me a cease and desist order.
Joe Patak.
Following a long protracted paper battle. They do not license any radio stations below 100 watts. And what we're trying to do as a locally based media organization, trying to get news and local information to the local community, we have a very limited target audience. And so that we don't feel that we need more than what we're using right now, 45, we don't need more than 100 watts to reach our target audience.
We have 22 hours a day, roughly, of citizens being on the air that are not professionals, that are just citizens.
We have voiced our concerns for over 3 years only to be told, if you don't like the way we run things, move on.
Bill Aragon, road worker.
Many elected officials refuse to meet with us to hear our concerns. They exclude us and treat us unfairly. They have forced many good employees to quit rather than put up with the unfairness and insensitivity of supervisors and their hatchet men. Hays County Road Crew Workers Task Force and their supporters are tired of broken promises and the daily harassment and intimidation of their supervisors. These grown men are tired of being cursed at, given unsafe equipment and dangerous assignments by supervisors.
This is all flow. We've done this all very organically.
Seal Stefanoff.
We've created, for example, if anything happens in San Marcos now, people all have all these little digital phones and stuff. They themselves, they don't have to be a reporter or anything else, are calling in giving the stories. So it's a different kind of news. It's a different kind of flavor. And it's more of a community responsibility rather than leaving it up to a professional organization to supply you with what they think is right.
I've been blessed to have the ability to do road construction, operate several pieces of equipment, and I believe that God wanted me to work for the county. I feel great working for the county. I like to do what the county does. But then when I started seeing the discrimination, that the road director has the attitude that if you like it, fine. If not, I'll find somebody else. That's a piece of cake, you know, go ahead. And doesn't care about the seniority, the loyalty, the dedication that you've had, being there on time and using unsafe equipment, because I need the job, all right. And him abusing of that, you know. And then all of a sudden, something within inside of you says, stand up. Stand up and fight, because righteousness prevails. So I believe it came up inside of me that I looked around, and my mama, before she passed away, she lived here almost 4 years, and she paid taxes here. And I said, how can I go home and tell my mama that it's all right to keep paying taxes when I see how her tax money was being wasted out there, the inconsistency of the roads? The road director said, I'm going to prove that I can do this, I can. But it really wasn't being done right.
You think you've got a lot of listeners around here?
We are the only game in town when certain events occur. For example, there was a devastating 500-year flood that came into San Marcos and hit this area dramatically. People in surrounding counties, every surrounding county to us, had people die during the flood. We were on the flood, we went live with phone callers, had hundreds of phone callers nonstop. I did 4 hours that night from 6 to 8, and then I came back from 10 to 12 constant calls the whole time, getting reports from people around town about the conditions. We're intimately involved throughout the entire event with educating the people with services that were being threatened or places they could go, connecting families together, doing everything that is necessary in an emergency situation to prepare a community to respond to a crisis.
There was a house that had been stranded that had been able to call and said they would listen to the radio before the power went out. And so the police had called our station to put it on the air for them to hang where they were getting a helicopter in or whatever to come get them. And they heard it on there because they had battery-powered radio. If that kind of communications weren't going on in our town where the police can use us, there was even a time when somebody lost a duffel bag of clothes. They were new to town, like a student that came to town. And they had met somebody that day and they said, well, call a kind radio and they'll get your clothes back. And 5 hours later, the guy had his clothes back. Somebody had found him, was listening to the radio. When you have that kind of community participation during disasters, then everybody feels the responsibility of helping out.
And once again, I want to ask you for your support and remind our elected officials that when you, as elected officials, become complacent, you who were elected by the people of this county and the community of San Marcos, we will push for reform. We will not stand idly by and let this inconsistent policy of discrimination, or the consistent policy, excuse me, of discrimination, harassment, and intimidation of our citizens to continue.
Why do you think the FCC hasn't shut you down so far? I mean, you've been doing it for a long time, longer than most.
I think that the FCC is really bothered by our arguments. I think they have a real problem in justifying action against us because what we do is what radio, and particularly FM radio, was established for. We have a group of individuals that have stood up and taken control of those airwaves in a responsible, in a very creative, in a dynamic manner that have made it urgent listening. People are compelled to listen to our station. People's lives have been impacted in dramatic ways in our community as a result of this radio station. And I see the same thing possible in communities across this nation.
There's everything from Latin hip-hop to country and western to, and you might go from a rap music show to a country western 2 hours later. I mean, it's every 2 hours, and we do no formatting. That's one thing we've seen a lot of stations. They want to format, they want to censor, they want to do this. We do no formatting. If you apply for a time period and that time period opens up, you get it. And you might be right next to gang members that are doing their show, and the next one might be anarchists, and the next, I mean, might be flower children, whatever. I mean, it's so it's it, in that it has a whole different flavor in the community.
One of the biggest impacts is on our youth. I live in, and this is, they call this the heart of the ghetto. I know my mom's not gonna love this, but it's, and she actually comes out and visits me, and you know, it's, you have a rap band, yeah, they're live from the heart of the ghetto, you know, kind of radio, okay. And so there's gang activity, and there was at points in time there gets friction within the different gang affiliations with our community, and what the radio station has done is smooth those. We have gangs who have one show following another, or who have crossed into each other's shows because the music and the scene, and it's like a whole. I've seen individual youth change from being all bad, you know, and all, you know, trying to, you know, be bad, you know, nasty, I mean, doing bad things, have bad habits, doing dangerous things, to all of a sudden they're working on their raps, and now they're all, you know, they're looking good, man, they're, you know, got the shit going, they got the style going, they're working on their words, because it ain't easy coming up with a rap song, man. It's even harder coming up with a rap song and the beats to put together.
There was one point where we had a lot of liberal programmers on, but they didn't want people like the Klan, Ku Klux Klan on, or the pro-life people, all that. And it was like, no, this station's open to everybody. You know, it's open to everybody. And that's one of the things we've seen with some of the other stations, that they want to pre-censor who they're putting on. And I don't agree with that, because it's freedom of speech, it's free airwaves.
We request that programmers bring toilet paper. Toilet paper is a real problem, so we ask them. That's not a requirement, but we like the programmers to bring toilet paper, especially the women, like, you know, when I have toilet paper here. And I learned, like, after, like, the first 3 or 4 weeks, there was no way I was going to be able to keep this house loaded with toilet paper, I do have, a lot of people do credit me with having the cleanest public restroom in town, so, anyway.
Now what about the donkey meter? Explain the donkey.
This is our goal of our programmers, is to keep this needle from getting buried over here, or just belaying dead.
Yeah.
This gives us a certain level of dynamics, which is so it sounds better on people's radios. But that's again one of those parts of unprofessionalism. Some people use the donkey meter as an element of their show, and they will purposely bury it because of the buzz and feedback attempts, or other times kick it back on it so people have to turn up their radios and then blast them later. So we have a lot of innovations that people can start playing and messing with people's minds with about all of them we do here.
It's kind of interesting because each micro station takes on the character and personality of the people at that station. And of course, San Marcos, Texas, they're right near the Mexican border. And a lot of the DJs have kind of a southern twang to their voice. And they're into Texas music and, you know, border music. And southern Texas is very hot and dry, so people like to drink beer to, you know, keep their fluid level up. So a lot of times you'll hear people, you know, drinking beer on the air and, you know, spouting off drunkenly about what they think of the mayor of San Marcos or whatever. And so, you know, it has a great Texas regional flavor.
And Pappy wants to make a comment at this point, and I would like to hand the microphone over to him.
Guess what? You might just find Pappy there, because that's my birthday. What a cool thing to happen on my birthday. Can't you just dig it? Chick-a-boom, chick-a-boom. Can't you just dig it? Chick-a-boom, chick-a-boom. I'm out of here for a second.
Thank you, Pappy, for those very inspiring words.
Hundreds of stations went on the air in the mid-90s as the Dunifer case moved through the courts. The National Association of Broadcasters declared war on the micro-radio movement and pressured the FCC to step up efforts to shut stations down. NAB member stations were asked to search out unlicensed broadcasters and report their whereabouts to the FCC. Dozens of stations had their equipment seized, hundreds were shut down, and in Florida, one station operator was held at gunpoint for several hours while federal marshals virtually demolished his home. Another Florida broadcaster was prosecuted and imprisoned. All the while, FCC Chairman Kennard said he was considering a legalization plan.
Do you want to establish a micro-broadcasting, a legitimate micro-broadcasting service, so everybody get a shot at doing this? Or do you want to be anarchists and go out there and just willy-nilly broadcast on the there's a real division here.
The vote was 4-3 for anarchy.
Pardon? Anarchy? Now, I'm going to give you some advice.
Harry Jessel, Broadcasting and Cable Magazine.
You got a window of opportunity. You got an FCC chairman. This probably never happened again in the history of this country. You got an FCC chairman who likes this idea, and he's got 2 or 3 votes there. He only needs 3 votes to do this. He's got, but he's not going to be able to do it if Congress steps on it. You got to go up to Congress. You got to get people on the Hill to back this idea to give Bill Kennard cover to do this. That's you can do this, but you got to get organized. You got to be political. You can't be anarchist.
We're lobbying later today, actually.
Well, that's good. Do you really think
the FCC would have listened to us had we not gone on the air and break the law?
Jerry Zoka, Grid Radio, Cleveland.
Just out of the kindness of the heart, you think they would have said, well, okay, well, let's consider microbroadcasting. No, that people have been trying to get licenses for micro radio for 20 years since the licenses were abolished, and they've denied them. So what we have to put the cart before the horse. That's all we could do to get their attention.
Today to get that started. And you're all welcome to join us at our rally at 11 o'clock at DuPont.
There is a place for civil disobedience, and I think it does bring attention. But I just don't think it's going to move the ball here. I think you gotta you know, put on a suit and tie, you got to go to Capitol Hill and convince these guys.
Angry microbroadcasters decided to fight back and called for a national mobilization in Washington, D.C. in October of 1998. Broadcasters marched on FCC and NAB headquarters with giant puppets illustrating the FCC's subjugation to the NAB in corporate America. The demonstrators even conducted an unlicensed broadcast on the FCC's doorstep.
On the radio, and they've been having cows about it, you know, about us playing like loud, aggressive music, some punk rock and stuff. And to hell with that, man. We have freedom of speech. We can say what we want to say when we want to say it, man.
That's right. The opposite of, or the counter to free, to bad speech is more speech. And as a good friend of mine put it last night, we have the right to say what we want to say, when we want to say it, even if we don't have anything to say.
What are you guys doing out here today?
Oh, okay. Well, we come to the steps of the FCC and the National Association of Broadcasters to let them know that a policy of pure repression against micro radio is just not going to work. It's just not going to work to keep the voices of America silent.
Petri dish of radio mutiny.
There is, most democratic countries understand that it is a necessity to have a free media system. It's necessary for ordinary citizens to be able to communicate, and if they can't communicate, they're going to turn to piracy. FCC today to publicly defy their administrative regulation prohibiting broadcasting at less than 100 watts. We have brought a giant free speech switch. We will throw this free speech. We will throw this free speech switch. I'm going to yell at you. We're going to throw this free speech switch, and we're going to turn on our free radio station in front of the offices of the FCC. We're encouraging the chairman of the FCC to come on down and put the handcuffs on us if he thinks what we're doing is so damn wrong.
What's important,
David Fisk, Federal Communications Commission,
isn't whether they want to get into a semantical argument about that transmitter. What's important is if they're interested in microbroadcasting, making their views known to the FCC and giving us their comments and the benefit of their views, so we can make a reasoned, intelligent judgment. That's, again, the chairman says they should harness their energies in a constructive fashion to be, you know, within the law.
Please allow me to introduce the characters. This is FCC Chairman Bill Canardio.
Hi, Bill!
This is the National Association of Broadcasters.
Of a lobbying association used to getting its way on Capitol Hill. And that is the corporate giant that pulls the strings behind all of them. Corporate America. Corporate America creates a kind of radio that all it is about is teaching people that the only way that they're going to be happy is if they buy more stuff. Let's take it to who's really pulling the strings, the National Association of Broadcasters.
We want our transmitter back!
Yeah! We want our transmitter back!
By the way!
That's 6 feet.
You're here with the person who didn't see.
I want 6 feet of space in here.
Everybody back 3 steps. Everybody back 3 steps. Move back 3 steps. 3 steps.
Well, I tried to advise you to move it out. And I announced it to the other day.
They claim that I stole the flag.
You know, that 6 feet goes for the media also.
Dennis Wharton, National Association of Broadcasters.
It was a demonstration by pirate broadcasters in front of the NAB. They pulled down the NAB flag. They rolled up the Jolly Roger flag. It was a source of entertainment for us.
Micro radio was also on the air at the WTO demonstrations in Seattle in 1999. Delivering moment-by-moment breaking news from the streets and discussing the larger issues of the protest.
You know, India is a very big country, and we can't afford to eat this McDonald's junk food.
The Indy Media Center, put together by the folks in Seattle, my understanding is they've got websites, they got print, audio, photographs, they got video. I mean, I was out tape recording a labor rally earlier with the steelworkers, one of the few permitted rallies today.
Alan Korn, National Lawyers Guild.
And people are just, you know, encoding it digitally and encoding it and putting it on the web.
The idea behind it being?
Being to get the message out without going through the traditional gatekeepers of the media. And I think that's been a really big success.
All right, you're listening to Studio X here, broadcasting Voices of Occupied Seattle, coming to you from front lines here on Thursday evening from heart of downtown Seattle inside the Constitution Free Zone, otherwise known as the Curfew Zone in downtown Seattle. This country has this hidden history of when people don't have a voice, when they cannot control their own destiny and their futures, they take to the streets and raise bloody hell. And this is what's been happening here in Seattle.
Then they took their battle to the streets. The first pepper spray followed isolated clashes between protesters and police.
I've got my respirator. I can sit peacefully. They'll have to arrest me and drag me off by my hair.
The arrest began as tensions grew along with the crowd. Tens of thousands of union workers marched downtown in the afternoon, turning up the heat. Heat that eventually turned to fire, rioting, and a disturbing refrain from Chicago, 1968.
And I have to commend people who were in lockboxes, locked down in the middle of these streets on Tuesday, you know, being literally showered with munitions from the police, flashbang grenades flying over their heads, OC gas, CS gas, all being wafted down on them while they were locked down in their support circle, you know, had to stay there in the middle of this intersection and put up with this kind of abuse. But the amazing thing was, when they stayed there and stood their ground to this kind of abuse, the cops decided they were too much trouble and would move to the next intersection and try the same tactic all over again on people who maybe were more willing to move and not stand their ground.
And I'm confident that our police, the other thing I heard was many kudos for both the Seattle Police Department, the King County Police Department who worked with us, the State Patrol, that our officers showed restraint.
Anybody who has any incidents to report, the ACLU would like you to either call their website or call their phone number. And any unprovoked physical aggression by police, shoving, kicking, hitting with billy clubs, overly forceful restraint, use of pepper spray, tear gas, CS gas, shots of rubber bullets against nonviolent protesters or onlookers, either without warning or in excess.
I got hit by a police baton.
Why?
Because I was standing in the street, and he was purposely going for my head.
These are rubber bullets. This is the tear gas. Bust, it pops open in the air.
Kind of like a paintball. Yeah, that one has been popped open, and there's the gas that's inside.
I bet these are one of the larger bullets, though.
It felt big, but I mean, of course.
And all of a sudden, all the cops dropped and started firing. And
it was so quick.
Instantly, something hit me in the head, and I fell. My head was ringing, and I didn't even know I was bleeding for quite a while. I took my hat off, and I saw my hand was all bloody.
So you were walking towards them?
We were actually walking just right by them, not even towards them, not threateningly. We were saying peaceful demonstration. We had our fingers in the air. It was so unprovoked.
When people were being so peaceful and just blocking the streets, but being very peaceful about it, and all of a sudden the policeman would just decide to jump up and run over and spray some tear gas or some pepper spray, and it was really hard to figure out why.
The cops were just, even this fairly corporate news radio, news talk person was on the radio last night. He was even calling it a police riot. So I feel we're making some progress here in education about what's really going on out here. I mean, this is pretty unprecedented use of force.
Ralph Nader.
These demonstrations in Seattle should have happened 6 years ago. And the reason why they didn't is because the mass commercial media shut out the critical issues affecting the World Trade Organization legislation that was being proposed by President Clinton to the U.S. Congress.
Hey, Michael.
Yeah.
I'm working on a documentary film on pirate radio broadcasting.
Oh, good for you. Very important.
Michael Moore.
I'm wondering what you think of the whole issue.
Well, I fund some of them.
Do you?
That's all I have to say about that.
What brought you out here to the WTO?
The guy that runs the WTO, he caught my name. It's some kind of weird punishment. I must have done something in my life to deserve this. You know, it's kind of like that other guy who's named Lee Harvey Oswald, but he's not the guy, you know? But it's like for the rest of his life, he's Lee Harvey Oswald.
So you've been mistaken.
I'm stuck with the same thing now.
Have you talked to him?
I'm trying to talk to him. They wouldn't let me through.
Have you thought about a name change?
He could change his name. You know? He should just change his name from Mike Moore to I'm dumb as shit for coming to Seattle, you know?
Is there any place that has more liberals in Seattle?
Mm-hmm. No, you know what? They probably wanted to have this meeting at the WTO in Berkeley, but yeah. All the hotel rooms were all full with Pacifica board members.
Tell me about Prometheus.
Well, we created the Prometheus Radio Project, inspired. I mean, let's take a look at the name.
Greg Ruggiero, author of Micro Radio and Democracy.
The Prometheus Radio Project was named after the Greek character Prometheus. And, you know, buried in our psyche is this myth of Prometheus that, you know, the gods will control fire and the gods will decide from on high when humanity will be able to use fire. And one character in this whole story, Prometheus, said, hey, it's not up for the gods to decide when humanity will use fire. Humanity will use fire when it decides it's best to use fire. So Prometheus, you know, went up and he snuck a spark and he went down and he said, yo, human beings, here it is. Fan it up, you know, use it as you see fit. And we borrowing that myth because like Prometheus, we feel that humanity in our country, in our society, is being denied the right to communicate. And you know, the corporate powers that be are controlling fire, and they're deciding if and when communities are going to be able to make their own media and tell their own stories. And we said, you know, like the Zapatistas, ya basta, enough. We're going to do it anyway. So the purpose of the Prometheus Radio Project is to share the spark, is to conduct workshops and have training sessions so people and communities can learn how to set up a radio station, how to acquire a transmitter, how to communicate with itself in a way that's going to benefit and empower the community there.
Did you listen when they were broadcasting up here?
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
Well, you know, a lot of it was amateurish, but it was very refreshing.
Ben Bagdikian, author of The Media Monopoly.
when I was on a, I was in visiting in San Francisco before I moved to this area in the 50s. And there was a little hole in the wall in San Francisco where the soundproof was reversed egg crates. And they were broadcasting to the neighborhood. And that was perfectly legal. And they could talk about local problems, about they need a stop sign on a certain street and the cops weren't patrolling a certain area. And they had their own listeners. So it can be done. And I think it should be done. And because there were so many people who were willing to do it, even outside the law, they finally are beginning to loosen up a little bit. But it takes eternal vigilance, because everyone who tunes into that station isn't tuning into a top 40 station.
Do you think that LPFM, is that one of the worries too, that it may provide more competition for broadcasters who may well have, because of consolidation, might not be focusing as much locally, that an LPFM station might provide something of more interest to local communities than, say, something broadcast out of Toledo, Ohio, or something like that?
Our concern over LPFM is not related to competition, it's related to interference.
Dennis Wharton, National Association of Broadcasters.
We think there's no way to shoehorn hundreds, if not thousands, of new stations onto a congested, finite radio band without creating significant interference and less ability for listeners to actually hear their hometown radio stations.
The NAB are incredibly well endowed with money.
Greg Ruggiero.
But they're very unpopular in the public eye right now. The public knows that the purpose of the National Association of Broadcasters is not to create a democracy, but rather to capture the largest block of public attention, which it then sells like scrap metal to be used for advertising.
Get those comments in by August 2nd.
Microbroadcasters like Vinia Free Radio Santa Cruz encourage listeners to file petitions of support with the FCC for the legalization of microradio.
And the points that I would encourage you to make to the FCC when filing, especially about this particular 99-25 notice of proposed rulemaking regarding the issue of low power FM radio service. Specifically, we're asking for non-commercial access. So we don't want, if they do license people, we don't want stations to be able to run advertisements. We think that our station is a perfect example of how a community can come together to run a radio station. And we don't need the interests of the corporations that dominate the media to come in and buy out all our frequencies.
Do you think the FCC has done a decent job of managing the airwaves?
Dennis Wharton, National Association of Broadcasters.
They are shutting down pirates, which is a good idea. Pirates are illegal, number one. They're causing disruptive transmissions between airline pilots and air traffic controllers. That's their main job, or one of their main jobs, is to be the spectrum police, if you will. And it's important. It's an important role that the FCC has, and I think they are pretty good at policing the spectrum. We understand Chairman Kennard's goals with this proposal, and they're laudable goals. More diversity is a good thing, and we support it.
The fact is that the NAB, they have to respect the authority of the FCC.
Captain Fred, Free Radio Berkeley programmer.
Even though they've been criticizing very harshly Chairman Bill Kennard, and in fact they even had an editorial on their website saying, "Bill Kennard, the man who killed radio in America," and they've been screaming bloody murder about this stuff, mostly charging interference.
What do you think about Bill Kennard?
I think Bill Kennard is a very brave man. I think he's showing a lot of dedication and perseverance. He's come under a lot of fire from the start. I mean, when he first came on board, he announced that he intended to create some sort of low-power broadcast service and let regular community people get on the radio And he's caught a lot of criticism for this, but he has persevered. And in fact, he's brought a lot of people, including three of the other four commissioners, over to his side.
We see an FCC that's increasingly responsive to the pressure that we are exerting on the grassroots level.
Greg Ruggiero.
We've got lawsuits. We've got letter writing campaigns. We've got civil disobedience. We've got protests. We've got people all over this country engaging in micropower radio and putting the pressure on the FCC. We are getting positive exposure in the media, and we're seeing William Kennard responding in a very positive way. Not entirely positive, but shows the beginnings of a positive response. How? The FCC have issued a notice of proposed rulemaking suggesting that micropower radio in some form or another be legalized. When you actually look at the details of their proposal, you see that there's a lot of mistakes, and you know, the FCC makes suggestions that are totally abhorrent and no one would ever accept it except for, you know, commercial entities. But we see them taking steps toward the legalization of micropower radio.
The strategy of the FCC to divide and conquer.
Ron Sokolsky, author of Seizing the Airwaves.
To get everybody hyped up about this possibility of low-power radio has, in a sense, backfired as they continue to postpone making a decision, and it becomes clear that this is more and more of an illusion. Even the proposals that get floated seem to be inadequate and so on. People who are enticed, you know, by the possibility of doing licensed radio where they wouldn't constantly be under threat are now reevaluating.
Stephen Dunifer, founder of Free Radio Berkeley.
It's going to shift the terrain quite a bit. I mean, people are not, you know, are not going to be helped much by what the FCC is proposing. I think when they realize that they're being essentially offered a bill of goods without much substance, it's going to perhaps even aggravate them even more, hopefully.
January 20th of this year, a lot of us were very excited to hear that the FCC had decided to approve some sort of plan for low-power FM broadcasting. And immediately cries of woo-hoo were heard coming from our studio down here on Dwight Way in Berkeley. And people were making announcements to the effect that, oh boy, now we can get a license. We're not pirate radio anymore. We can get a license. And these are folks who read the large print and did not read the small print. First of all, anybody who has illegally broadcasted since February 26th of 1999 will be automatically considered ineligible. Anybody who broadcasted after 24 hours of receiving a notice from the FCC will be considered ineligible.
What do you think about that?
I think it sucks.
FCC is saying that people who engaged in civil disobedience and did this while it was illegal won't be responsible license holders because they didn't obey the unjust law in the first place. That's like telling Rosa Parks, after sitting in the front of the bus, that she's not allowed to have the same rights as everybody else because she'll be an unreliable citizen because she didn't follow the rules. Well, it's because of the micro broadcasters in the first place that this whole issue was forced into the mainstream media and forced onto the radar screen of the FCC.
Anybody who lives in an urban area like the San Francisco Bay Area or Los Angeles area or New York City area will be ineligible because the FCC is protecting the adjacent channels for the high power broadcasters who are already on the air. These folks will not have to give up 1 watt of power.
Never, ever will I ever consider a license.
Mbana Kantako, Human Rights Radio.
I don't really care what the FCC's talking about. I mean, they can talk about anything they want, and they can, and they have, and they will. That's not our concern. Our concern is the liberation struggle. And if this is an effective means to assist us in the struggle for liberation, well, they have to do what they got to do because we're going to do what we got to do, period. They're not an issue. It's like when we came back on in 89, we have had to apparently made that decision. And there's no change in the program, none. The conditions that we were speaking against in 89 have only gotten worse. So if anything else, we're more resolved in our commitment.
Within the micropower radio movement, there is a strong anarchist contingent, people like Mabana and Steven, who do not respect the FCC's claim to authority over the airwaves. They feel that the airwaves belong to the American people and should not be auctioned off to the highest bidder and multinational corporations the way they are now in this country. So I suspect even if we got everything on our wish list granted to us, there would still be people violating FCC regulations. For instance, my good friend Billy Jam called me up on the phone. He said, "Paul, now that the FCC has changed the rules, does this mean the end of pirate radio?" I told him, "Don't worry. There will always be pirate radio."
You've been listening to a radio adaptation of the video documentary Free Radio by Kevin Kaiser, released earlier this year. You can find out more about the documentary by visiting www.freeradio.com. And for more information on how to apply for a low-power FM license, visit the National Lawyer Guild's Committee on Democratic Communications website at www.nlgcdc.org. This information will also be on the Unwelcome Guests website at www.radioforall.org/unwelcome. Since the documentary was completed, the NAB has worked nonstop to kill the proposed micro-radio service. Members of Congress who received campaign donations from the broadcast industry, including Billy Tauzin of Louisiana and Representative Michael Oxley of Ohio, have sponsored a bill in Congress to deny LPFM to the people. This bill is ironically called the Preservation of Radio Act. In another recent development, Kind Radio from San Marcos, Texas, one of the stations featured in the documentary, has shut down after receiving an order from a federal judge. V-Man from Free Radio Santa Cruz spoke with Joe Patak of Kind about their court case and the larger fight for a free media.
So you guys have been on the air since March of 1997. Can you talk a little bit about the reason that San Marcos Kind Radio started?
Well, like in many other small communities, between two larger urban areas, the local radio stations in this area had turned into just additional advertising vehicles for corporations and businesses who were saturating the large city areas, in our case, Austin and San Antonio. And there was no real news or information available to the local community.
Now, when you first went on the air in 1997, as far as I understand it, you actually sent in $25 to the FCC and considered that your filing fee. Is that correct?
Yeah, we put in, we sent money in, and we put a letter in telling them that we requested a waiver, and you know, what we're trying to, from our reading of the and what we're doing, we didn't find a way them to you know, address us, and as soon as they could tell us what we should do, we would go ahead and try to work with them.
So could you talk a bit about Kind Radio's situation or history with the Federal Communications Commission over the years? I know you guys have pretty much gone on the offensive in filing some lawsuits.
Okay, we actually were one of the first stations to get a compliance hearing with the FCC. And unfortunately, we don't feel we were treated very well in that process. Our attorney died just a month or so before our initial court date, and the FCC didn't give us any time to actually get another attorney. We ended up filing lawsuit with the district court, the federal courts, against the FCC on July 4th of 1999. And it was in response to that lawsuit that on September 1st, we received a temporary injunction from federal district judge Fred Berry, ordering us to temporarily cease operation until our court date, which will be September 29th, at which time we'll be able to present our arguments for reopening in the public interest. And the FCC, I'm sure, will be seeking a permanent injunction against our broadcast. We're being optimistic and hope that he will recognize our good faith effort to comply with his order, and he will give us a good faith listening to our arguments, and hopefully the Constitution will prevail.
So with the FCC's decision to license, start issuing licenses to low-power FM or micro-broadcasters, are you seeking one of these construction permits, if you will, to build a radio station?
Yeah, well, the community now has been totally mobilized, and, you know, once you let the genie out of the bottle and they've seen the potential for micro radio, there are several ventures right now involving everyone from the actual city government themselves to local civil rights groups and schools and various aspects of other aspects of the community who are going to probably be applying for a permit.
So with this cease and desist order, I have to ask the inevitable, is this the end of Kind Radio?
As we know it, Kind Radio is no longer in existence. However, there will be a spawn of Kind Radio in our local community, and there are many people who are excited and looking forward to doing that. And
any final thoughts?
Well, it's a long road to freedom, and especially freedom of thought. And it's one thing to have freedom of thought, but it's another thing for people to be able to hear those thoughts and that information and evidence, particularly in the time where we have increasing consolidation of the media. We have war developing in Colombia as well as our own borders. The ability for real people to be able to communicate to each other over the public airwaves is a power that I think is obvious now scares the United States government to death, and I hope that we're able to unleash that power to get the government and the media back into a correct situation.
All right, Joe Patak from Kind Radio, San Marcos, Texas. I want to thank you for joining me tonight.
Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Unwelcome Guests is produced by Chris Sturr, Jesse Lind, Lynn Gary, and Sean Ewald. We are solely responsible for its content.
You still catch me napping one day and they'll kill me. Then I'll be gone, but that won't be my end. For my guns and my saddle will always be filled by unwelcome travelers.